These are pictures we... And now we're getting to Ganges. And this was Malcolm and Purvis' store before Mohit's body. 1904, I think this picture dates from. And I like this picture because of the oxen and the horses and, you know, different means of modes of transportation. But it was can always continue to be a focal point from that time. Before Malcolm and Purvis moved their store from Central, where we are, to Ganges really didn't, there wasn't much in Ganges. But from the time they moved the store, I guess they saw the writing on the wall, and then the Mohits saw even more writing on the wall and bought the store from Malcolm and Purvis, and then built a new store in 1907 next to it. Ganges became the center of the island. So the original store is on the left, and the new store that we still have today is on the right. The building on the left doesn't exist anymore. It was a store for a while, and then it became Granny's boarding house. And people like Lotus Ruckel, who, when she went to a high school in town, was too far for her to go, so she boarded at Granny's boarding house. Kind of odd to think that it was too far to come from Ruckel Park to Ganges and go back in the same day, but in those days you couldn't do it. So she boarded Monday through Friday or whatever it was in town and went home for the weekends. Mohits today. Now, one of the interesting things about Ganges is that it really didn't look much like it does today then, even without the buildings, because a lot of Ganges was water, and a lot of Ganges has been created through landfill. And so where Mohits was, on, as you can see in this photograph, was really a peninsula. And you can't really see that peninsula anymore because the land was filled on both sides. And we've got a lot of photographs, and we go back and forth, we jump around a bit in this, but you'll see how it's changed with these photographs. But that's one of the early photographs. The magic of Frank's photography. Or at least his electronics. That's the trading company building from the back. The trading company was just about waterfront at that time. I think there was still a little restaurant across the road, but it was on the water. And of course all the parking lot and thrifties didn't exist. There was a lot of water, not much land back then. There's a trading company on the right and the old gas station on the left. Kind of interesting. Now, when you see some of these old photographs, some of the later ones that you'll see in a couple of minutes, when you see the current gas station that no longer exists sitting there, it kind of makes it look a bit like the old days. And you'll see what I mean, I think, when you see these photos. That's a new picture of the trading company. And Mohits from the back, from the water. And an old picture of Mohits from the back. Still has the same sign. I think it's the same sign. Looks like the same sign. Maybe it's been enhanced a bit since then. Anybody know where that is?
Yeah.
Right. And where is it today?
Ganges.
There you go. So they've added a bit onto the building, but you can still see the building in the middle there, the original building. Now we're back to the peninsula and the water around it. This was sort of a doctored photograph, but it kind of shows it, you know, what it looked like. And of course, that's all landfill around it now. I have some aerial photos that show how it changed over the years. We considered going up in a helicopter and taking some aerial photographs, but the Historical Society didn't think they could afford it. So there's the beginning of Centennial Park. They created the boat basin, and when they took the dredged for the boat basin, they dumped the soil onto the area that's now Centennial Park. And I believe it was John Stepaniuk who worked for the Highways Department in those days, who had access to a Caterpillar or a bulldozer, and he leveled it all off, and eventually it became Centennial Park. So Centennial Park was created from the stuff they took out of the boat basin to make the harbor there, which is now the government dock. And there you see Centennial Park developing. I think that's the cenotaph, isn't it? Yeah, in the middle. And it was, I think we have a few photographs of it where when it was in the middle of the road, but then eventually it got moved to Centennial Park. Yeah. And Centennial Park getting much like it is today. Closer. So there's a more up-to-date photograph of Grace Point. I think this was one of the photographs I took on the... We found, Gail and I found a spot on Mount Belcher that I think they're building on it now. We just found it in time before they started building. It's a lot up on the Wilkie Way, and we got these wonderful photographs. It's amazing what you can do with digital cameras too. And now we have a few of the cenotaph showing how it changed over the years. Its position and what it looked like. There it is in the middle of the road. And that's an earlier one, earlier version of the cenotaph. We think it probably started in 1920 because there's a photograph that was identified as when it was dedicated.
1917.
Before the end of the war?
Yeah, honor roll.
So, explain that, Bob. What's the honor roll?
I think those who enlisted in the Second World War.
Oh, so not just the people who died?
No, it's honor roll,
1917. Okay, that explains it's 17. Okay, I thought it was just at the end of the war for the people who died. Because now it's just the people who died, right?
Yes.
So this is really a different thing then from the it's the other one. Gee, I didn't think you were that old, Bob.
Quite.
I didn't think there'd be anybody who'd know what happened that way back then. 1917. So this was the dedication. The dedication was dated, is that 17 too, or 20?
Probably 17. Yeah.
So this is the Log Cabin Rest Cafe, later became Rita's Inn, and what is it today?
Salt Spring Inn,
right. And this was built by Bullitt for one of his boys. So he had these people who worked for him. He got them from an orphanage in Victoria. He had two, one was a cook and one was his chauffeur. And this guy, he usually helped them, after they left him, and to get started in business. And he built this restaurant for this particular boy. And here's another picture of it. The building to the right of it is the First Bank, which I think dates to 1913 and still exists. It got quite a facelift a few years ago when some of us were a little perturbed because it doesn't really look like it looked back then. But it was the Merchants Bank in 1913. 1913 was an interesting year because some people seem to think that this place was going to erupt, and they built a huge hotel. We actually had a picture at some point of the hotel burning down, but somehow it's not even in the sequence anymore. But it was sort of on the waterfront, I think, across from those buildings. So they built that hotel, and it burnt down, and then they built the bank, and the bank went out of business about a year and a half after it opened. But the building's still there.
Charles, look, is that the United Church and sort of the distance there?
Yeah.
When did that go up?
When did it what?
When was it built?
Oh, well, the original United Church was built quite early.
Methodist Church in Vesuvius.
Yeah.
Here at Central.
At Central, yeah. It was right here at Central. And it got moved to town. And it's now, I guess it's Sports Traders. But it went through a whole lot of incarnations. But that was the original United Church. I can't remember the date it was built. You bought?
Original Methodist Church?
Yeah. Oh, this one. This one, yeah.
Well, when was this photograph taken, then?
1964.
There's probably a reference in Salt Spring Story of Ireland if you want to check when it was built. But, you know, I wrote that book a long time ago and I forgot most of it. So that's why I was pleased to see so many faces of old timers here, because I knew that there was, I'm going to need a lot of help.
The bank, what is it now?
It's was the Walrus. Is it still the Walrus?
Yes, it's the Walrus.
Oh, yeah. Gold Exchange?
I think it's changed its name. Walrus. We all know it as Walrus.
Yeah, we all know it as the Walrus. So Frank took this picture of Thrifty's because you used to be able to see the trading company. Thrifty's is right across from it. But of course it was all water back then. So that gives you an idea of major change. And of course here is the Salt Spring Inn today. Major changes. They did major upgrading when they took that over. But still the same building. And this is kind of fun. Anybody know where that is?
Yes.
Yeah, Cory Inn. And it was a movie theater. And I remember when I first published that book, I called it The Garner House because everybody called it The Garner House. And then lo and behold, people would say to me, that wasn't The Garner House, that was The Hen House. And actually it was one of the hens who gave me this photograph, I think. Either that or Sue Mowat, because I got a lot of photographs from Sue Mowat, as well as a lot of information. When I met the hens, you know, the gardeners never actually finished the house. The hens finished the house. And they were quite upset. So when the first edition was sold out of the hardcover, the publisher allowed me to make some changes. And one of the changes I made was to introduce the hen name. And so now you can call it the hen house or the gardener house. But it was interesting because there was a movie theater there. So this wasn't the first movie theater that you're sitting in now. That was. And this is what it looks like today. The movie theater part's not there anymore. And now we're looking at Man Hall. Let's see what changes happened there. It was built originally. It was one of the early places for the early fall fairs. This was the location. Central was the location of the absolute first fall fair, but then it moved into town for a while. Well, still in town, but not on this location. So a lot of these pictures are fall fair pictures from early days. And this shows you how it's changed over the years. Still basically the same building. Had a recent upgrading recently. Some people like and some people don't. That's Salt Spring. And now we did the school. The school today. And the school when it was the first consolidated school, when all those one-room schoolhouses that you should know so much more than I do about were closed and consolidated into this school.
What year is that?
1940.
April 1st, 1940.
Good joke.
You can probably tell from the cars. If you're a car.
I thought something looked so old for 1940.
That was the day it was all christened. They're open. was there.
There you go.
I'll just turn a light on. You might have some questions for Charles, or Frank, or Bob Rush, or all the people here.
Yeah, there's lots of experts here, so if you have questions, I'm sure there'll be somebody to answer them.
Simon's best name was
Cull. Oh, thank you. I wasn't, I looked at that. I'm not going to pronounce this correctly. But I'm glad there's somebody who's pronouncing it. She's still in? All right. She's not in this gallery.
Any other comments or questions or reminiscences?
I have one.
Go ahead.
Corinne, the movie theater there, when did that disappear?
Anybody know when it disappeared?
It was built by Oni Carter.
When did it
But when did it disappear? That's a movie theater.
1925.
No, but 60s, in the early 60s.
Yeah.
Oh, the theater?
Yeah.
No, it disappeared.
Disappeared about 58, 59.
Yeah. Right.
There's a tree at the elementary school in Ganges that was given by the royal family, and apparently they gave to schools, I guess, in rural areas. And I just wondered if anybody knew anything more about that.
Well, there was
it's an oak tree. It's on the corner of the elementary school. Yeah, it's on the. It's an oak tree at the corner of elementary school. There's also one down at the Anglican Church at Fulford. And they were for the coronation of King George the 5th or 6th.
I seem to remember 1939, but that's just...
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay. I think you're right.
But the seeds were from a tree in Buckingham Palace or something? Is that right?
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So Salisbury has, because he has royal connections.
Jan?
Yeah.
When did the bridge across Fulford Harbor disappear?
Anybody know?
1927, somewhere.
Who was it built?
Yeah, up and down.
When was it last used?
That would
very
be in the
mid-30s,
that went.
She's not here, though.
No, but I remember her telling me and her father take it up.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Baron Walt could tell you.
Yeah.
Her dad worked on the destruction of all these people.
It's interesting, when you look at some of the old photographs, there's a lot of bridges like that, because they didn't have caterpillars to level the land, so they just put bridges over things. So, for example, Johnny Bennett showed me where the Fulford Ganges Road goes, where, some of you all know, Rumcushion Lake Road, where they call it Rock Crusher Corner. It went off, if you're heading towards Fulford, went off to the right and over a bridge. And then when they got a caterpillar, they were able to make a straight road that went down, straight down. But it's interesting, just without having a caterpillar, how few things they could do.
So was that bridge over Fulford Inlet there just for walking on, or was that for carts?
I think it was for all transportation. I don't think there was a road along the shore.
It was wide enough for one cart.
Yeah.
Water.
Yeah. One lane bridge.
There's actually a good chance that part of that is on our front. When I grew up, the little cottage by the driveway of the main house, there was family story that's made out of the old bridge at Fulford. And it's one of those legends you believe. And then we returned here in 2001. I had to go up to the attic of that building and work up in it. And it's actually made out of 3x12 planks, the whole building, on edge. And there's a massive bridge beam. And there's no rafters or anything. It's just 3x12 long. And there's enough dirt up in there that it obviously was a road of some kind. I don't know whether it would have been off a bridge, a wharf in Fulford Village, or it might have been the causeway.
And someone else tells stories of something on their property built from the bridge as well.
Yeah. Question at the back there, yeah.
You mentioned the Centaf Monument being moved to various spots. I noticed there are 27 names on the level of the 1917 Great War, and there are only 9 for World War II, showing the relative losses between those two wars on a small island with a very small population.
Well, that was true of the country as a whole, too. I mean, the losses in the First World War were incredible.
Said there were no trees in those days, but...
Well, fewer trees.
A few trees. Yeah. Were there logged?
Were they logged? Yeah. Yeah. The island's been logged several times, actually.
The complete island?
Yeah, everywhere, yeah. When I was working on that book, I talked to somebody whose husband was a logger. She lived in Fulford, and you could look over towards Musgrave, and she said all you could see any time of the year was smoke, because they used to burn all the slug, yeah. So it was just smoke all the time. And they were logging in the 40s. The people I'm talking about.
How did they keep the logs up?
Well, depending on what time you're talking about, they had donkeys and cable. If you walk into the bush in a lot of places on the island, you'll see the old cable. I don't think I've ever found an old donkey. The old steam donkeys. No, these are steam donkeys, not real donkeys. that's a term for actually, it was something interesting. I was talking to somebody recently who was talking about logging in Ontario, and they called it something else. It was also an animal, but it was a different animal. But it was obviously the same kind of equipment to pull the logs out of the bush, using cable and so on.
If you have a computer, you can go on the Salt Spring Archives website, and there's quite a section there on the logging of Salt Spring Island. Large, lots of pictures and lots of insight into it. It goes back all the way back. So logging was a big business here at one time. Duncan.
My dad told stories of logging with horses, a team of horses. He was born in 1901. So it would have been 1920-ish. And they had skid roads, corduroy roads, and they'd bring these huge logs down. And to make them ride on the boat, they'd have to, what they called snipe them. They would make a round, like a boat bow, by hand with axes. And there was so much wood you could afford to do that. And you had to do it by hand. They also tell a funny story of trying to plow the farm with a team of logging horses. And the horses were trained that when the log hit something, they could lunge. Of course, if you're plowing and the plow hits a rock, the horses lunge, the whole plow will go upside down.
Anything else before we wrap up?
Well, Cusmore had a big log dump right at the foot of the Rainbow Road.
There's some log dumps. When I got here, there's log dumps all over the island. Every bay had a log dump in it.
There are actually eight log dumps in Genji itself.
Some of those photographs, you could see the log dumps in Genji.
And the one that where the marina is, that was the major log dump, and then there was one just in front of it, and the one beyond it. And in fact, they even have one that went on a ramp right off the rocks, halfway between where the marina is and where the Anglican church is. And there was a log dump that went off there.
There's a little island off Churchill Road called Powder Islet. And is that because they stored gunpowder there during the war? I know they stored munitions in Man Hall. And I just wondered.
I don't know, actually, but where's Marshall? Wasn't your father involved with blasting and stuff?
Yeah, but not
not there. No, no, I know, but I just wondered if they left
stored on our property.
Okay, because there were places where I think they stored powder for blasting purposes, you know, not for war purposes.
I think it was dumping pond.
Dumping pond?
Stumping.
Stumping, okay.
Any farmer could buy stumping butter at any given time.
Right.
Basically, if it were to go today, it wouldn't happen.
So I guess if you stored it on a little island off the shore, if anything happened, it might not destroy too much.
There's a question behind you there.
You mentioned that one of the topics that emerged while you were researching this was the transition from farming and, I guess, logging to tourism.
Yeah.
I wonder if you picked up any other themes during your research.
Probably lots, you know. I don't think I should talk about them now because there's too many, but I'm going to talk to them later, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Lots of things.
And in what ways is Salt Spring the same today,
then? Getting back to agriculture, yeah. Well, there's certainly lots of old families still here. Good variety of people. There's always been a terrific variety of people. Not quite as multicultural as it was at the beginning, which is kind of interesting, but huge variety of people from, I don't want to categorize people, but there's a great variety of people, all kinds. Anything you can imagine seems to appear in Salt Spring. So I think those are some of the ways.
It's always been
a
kind of eclectic place for people.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Anything else? Well, thanks, Charles and Frank. That was very interesting and very enjoyable. Well, that wraps up our programs for this year. We have a break now, and we start up again the second Wednesday of September. And we look forward to seeing you all out, and your membership will be due then, and we look forward to you all paying your membership. And we also would like ideas of programs. So if you have suggestions of programs you'd like us to present, we'll try and put them together. We've had a very good program this year. We've had nice crowds out. We've had lots of success. So we have some background information now on some of the programs we're going to be putting together in September and October and November and so on. So thank you all for coming in this nice sunny day, even though it was a bit cold. It was nice to see you all, and have a good summer, and we'll see you in September. And the tea and coffee.